Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the lesser of two evils and the numbers of the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want in any area of your life are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. And as you guys are phoning in and we're waiting to go to the phones, let me set the table as I often do and kind of talk about what the topic is all about when I say the lesser of two evils. One of the things I've noticed as a coach is that very often people will come to me with a decision to make, a difficult decision. And that decision is invariably between the lesser of two evils. It's like, here are these two choices, both of which suck. Help me choose between them. And what I know is that whenever it seems like the only two choices are between two pretty crappy things, that somebody's not seeing what really is possible. And I'll give you a couple examples. I got a call, it was probably a couple months back now, from a doctor. And she was working at a community hospital, public hospital, and she was basically trying to decide whether it was time to leave that hospital, even though she loved the work they did, because the conditions were so difficult that she felt she really couldn't be fully present with her patients. She couldn't really give her all to them. And then she could go into private practice and she would, you know, have a different kind of a quality of life, or to stay, still serve the people she wanted to serve in the community, and just get used to suffering. Now, again, what I knew, anytime it sounds like the choice is between crap and crapper, that somebody's not really seeing what's going on. And through the course of our discussion, it became clear to her that there were things she could do while at the hospital to transform the experience of working there. And in a very short space of time, she was able to begin to do that. One of the things I know, I've got a colleague, Amy Chen Mills-Nyam, who works at a place called the Center for Sustainable Change. And they do amazing work in some of the poorest parts of America. And some of the work that they do is with people in gangs. And one of the things that they're continually having to point out to people in gangs is that when somebody disses you, the choices are not between killing them and letting yourself become somebody else's punk. That there are actually a whole range of other things that can happen when you see the situation differently, when you see more choices. They talk about it as a third way, that there is always a third way, a higher way, another way of seeing a situation, that when you see it that way, it will make it apparent what you can do to make it more the way that you want it. I've had couples come in here, both sides, husbands, wives, to ask me, I've got a difficult decision to make. Do I leave my partner who's making me miserable and therefore get a little bit of freedom for myself, but what about the kids, you know, and go through all that? Or do I stay and suffer through it for the sake of the kids, for the sake of an easier life? Those are never the real choices. Anytime it seems like you're trying to choose between the lesser of two evils, it's just because you're not seeing that third way and the fourth way and the fifth way, a higher way of seeing that will show you that there are always more choices. The numbers to call if you want to get in to get coaching on having what you want in any area of your life, 866-254-1579, toll free, 866-254-1579. And let's begin today in North Carolina with Laura. Laura, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, nice to talk to you. I'm calling because I have a situation with the guys that I'm dating and my friends. There's some of my friends that don't like him, and I have tried and tried to restore harmony, and I respect their decisions, but now some of them don't really want to be around me because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place because I love everyone, and I'm the kind of person that just doesn't like drama.
So what is it? Does he smell? Does he have bad breath? Is he? I mean, what is it that they don't like about him?
There are just some things that have happened between he and I in the past, like things he's done, things he said and done to me, that I've forgiven that aren't really that bad, that they just see it as like, oh my God, and mm-hmm. they're just blowing it way out of proportion. And I don't really know what to do because now I feel like my relationship with my friends are strained, but I want to stay with my boyfriend.
Sure. So let me ask one question. Sure. this is my, you know, my personal metric. You know, is there any sort of a physical violence in the relationship?
No.
Okay. So that's just personal. It may or may not even be true, but I have a really strong opinion when that comes in.
But if
that's not what's going on, then the question is, so your ideal would be, couldn't we all just get along?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I get that. And it probably seems like right now, so this is perfect for our lesser of two evils conversation, like you're being asked to, I'm going to have to choose between my boyfriend and my friends.
Yeah.
And that would suck either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just play a little and let's just see what the third way or the fourth way or the fifth way, you know, what else might actually be available here? Like, for example, you know, have you enrolled your boyfriend in Project Getting My Friends on Board?
Well, he wants to talk to them, but the problem is that they just don't want to have anything to do with him. They won't even be around him or be tolerant of him. And I, you know, like I said earlier, I accept their decision, but it's like now I'm not even allowing to have them around my boyfriend because they're just so uncomfortable.
And is that uncomfortable? And again, forgive me, I just don't know, so I've got to ask these questions. Oh. You know, did he come on to them? Did he, you know, what? Why are they so uncomfortable around him?
Because some things happened between him and I in the past in our relationship that could be perceived as violence, but it wasn't. These were decisions that I made quite immaturely at the time, and they somehow knew about them and just blew them way out of proportion.
Okay. So they're concerned for your safety and well-being?
Correct.
Okay. So that's nice. Right?
Correct.
I mean, yeah. you know, you might wish that they would express that in a different way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I understand the concern. I appreciate that. And I've even written the letter saying, I appreciate your concern, but let me do what I need to do.
Yeah. Which you're doing, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that. You know, you don't actually even need their permission. You're actually doing that, and you know, you're learning from, it sounds like, you know, what happened in the past, and you're making your way. Now, here's what occurs to me. Here's what I know about people. Okay, we're us people, because I'm one. We think, and when we think, what we think becomes our reality. It's just the world is what we think it is.
Right.
And so if I've created your boyfriend in my mind as Bob the abusive monster,
mm-hmm.
and it's silly, as long as when you say Bob, I think we're talking about Bob the abusive monster, it would be silly to ask me to hang out with Bob or forgive Bob.
Right.
Because as long as that's who I see him to be, that's just, why would I do that?
Right, I understand.
And so what we're really looking at is, okay, how can I recreate Bob? How can Bob recreate himself around them so that when they hear Bob, they're no longer making those pictures, they're no longer thinking of whatever it is that got locked in their head as, that is Bob.
Right.
And it may take some time.
Okay.
But
you don't think I'm going to like lose them as a friend simply because I'm still with him, do you? Because that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I don't, now, Laura, we're just getting into my experience, which I always think is of less value than my philosophy to an experience sense, but at least it's going to be true. In my experience, what makes a true friend is a feeling of connection and love and respect.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you spend time with each other in that, you create shared experiences together and a friendship is born and a friendship is nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
If there are people in your life who care about you, and clearly they do, because clearly even what the, even the behavior that they're doing is what they're doing. Here's a way of thinking about it. It's what we all kind of got taught to do by our parents. It's it's conditional love at its finest. It's you know, I will withhold my love from you, so until you behave the way I want you to behave, that I think you should behave, and then as soon as you do that, I'll give you back all the love and approval that I've been withholding.
Right.
And it's the blind leading the blind. We do that because that's what was done to us. In other words, that's how with all the best will, the, you know, complete innocence, but that's how almost everyone I've ever met, including me, was raised, with that kind of conditionality of, you know, I'm going to withhold my approval when you don't behave the way I think you should behave, and I'm going to give you my approval when you behave the way I think you should behave. Now, there's an unconditionality that you can bring to relationships, and it does have to start with you. That says, I love you regardless of what you choose to do in this situation. Now, again, if we're talking about Bob the monster, and if Bob the, and I'm not meaning your boyfriend is this, but if we're talking about somebody who's being physically abusive, I can love you and stay very far away from you.
Right.
But with your friends, you're really just opening up an understanding of, hey, I'm not going to withhold my love and approval of you to try and make you hang out with me and Bob.
Right. And so, that's what I'm trying to do. But lately, it's just sort of like I've been the proverbial punching bag. It's like everybody.
Okay, maybe an unfortunate choice of words in this particular case, Laura.
Yeah.
But what do you mean when you say that?
But it's like, you know, more drama keeps coming out of this one situation that I'm just trying to put behind me. You see what I'm saying? Like, I want to deal with it, but I also need other people to stop bringing it up so that I can actually move on.
Okay. So if it may be that for a little while, you know, if you've explained that and people continue to bring it up, then you may choose for a little while to take a break. Mm-hmm. But that's not losing your friends. That's just having a clear boundary, and, you know, if people aren't willing to play by that rule, then for the time being, those are the rules. And there may come a time where I'm fine with this, and there may come a time where I actually want to sit down and have this conversation. But if that time isn't now and you're not willing to respect that, well, there isn't actually a basis for our ongoing relationship right now.
Right.
And again, there doesn't have to be drama around it, though.
Right.
It's just your own clarity that will help you navigate this. If you're really clear of where you're at with this guy, and you're really clear of your own boundaries around, you know, your physical well-being, and you're really clear about what's fair game. Like, you know, there are people in my life who I know not to swear around.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they won't like me anymore, but because I know that for them, that's upsetting. So I won't swear around them.
Right.
You know, my kids know not to swear around me. I'm sure they go off and swear at school.
Right.
But that's okay. I appreciate that they respect me enough to behave a certain way around me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I would ask of my friends. And if for the time being they're not willing to do that, and it's very clear, I've made it very clear, they've expressed, yes, I understand that if I bring this up one more time, you're not going to talk to me for a while. I'm going to bring it up one more time. Well, then, okay, they've made their choice for now. And you know what to do.
Right.
And again, it's about clarity, not drama. The drama comes when we start thinking, oh, they shouldn't do that. How could they do that? If they loved me, they wouldn't do that. And that makes it all seem, you know, very dramatic and very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And when actually it's pretty straightforward. This is what I want right now. And if that's not okay with you, then okay. And I look forward to the day when it's okay again. And when our connection is more important to you than you getting me to behave the way that you think that I should.
Okay. Do you think it would be appropriate for me to, like, tell them that, exactly what you said.
I think it would be incredibly appropriate, Laura, and they will either say, wow, thank you for clarifying that. I get it. Or they may say, well, yours just, how could you keep saying that, Laura? You just don't understand. You're going to get yourself into the situation again, blah, blah. And if they do that, well, then that's what they see to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing to do with you. But the thing that is to do to you, if you haven't had the conversation that clearly with them, mm-hmm. well, that's yours.
Okay.
Yeah?
I understand now. Thank you so much, because I've had so much emotion around this.
Yeah.
Even though I've tried to be, like, sensible and adult about it, it's just, like, I need this to be resolved or clarified at some point.
Yeah, and that will just be a step in that direction. And just relaxing about a bit and opening up and letting your wisdom guide you. Because it also may be that you get into the middle of one of those conversations and you suddenly just see what's going on with your friend and you see, wow, they're scared because that touches something in them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that.
And that could open up a really lovely healing conversation too.
Okay.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, how does this apply to me? Well, you know, really, I think the principle behind it is just understanding that we all, us human beings, live in our own separate realities. We create, we think a certain way, we see the world a certain way, and when we get stuck in one way of seeing things, in one way of seeing people, that's just the way I am, that's just the way he is, that's just the way things are, then our choices get very limited, and our lives begin to get very small. And when we begin to open up to the fact that a new thought could come along in a moment that would have me seeing things differently and have me seeing possibilities where right now I don't see any, then not only can we move forward with more hope, but we're actually freer to kind of just, it just loosens the screws a little bit on our worldview. And it lets those thoughts move on. It lets the new higher thoughts come in. And it lets those new possibilities emerge. Let's go to Virginia and let's talk to Nadia. Nadia, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
My question is about setting boundaries and the anxiety and guilt that I feel when I do set my boundaries.
Oh, that's cool. How do you do that? It's like, how do you feel guilty about saying, stop hitting me in the face?
Well, I guess it's not that obvious, but, I mean, things, for instance, not catering to family and listening to a lot of the problems or not being available. I tend to carry other people's burdens, and I admit I'm somewhat impatient with people when they keep blaming their problems on other people and excuses and so on. So I tend to draw back or maybe not be available, and that makes me feel good because I don't have to hear about it, but yet I start, you know, worrying and thinking I'm a terrible person, I'm a heartless person, I'm not there for the people who love me, blah, blah, blah. So I guess it's trying to figure it out between setting your boundaries and loving what is. And
I think the only place where it's valuable to set boundaries mm-hmm. is from within a place of loving what is. I don't think there's a choice there at all. Because if I'm setting boundaries out of fear and discomfort, mm-hmm. then really what I'm trying to do is control the universe in order to make myself feel better. And that's unfortunately a losing game. Because the universe is bigger than I am. And it's not going to do what I say. Now, it might sometimes happen to do something in line with what I want, and then I'll feel really powerful for a minute. But I'm guessing if you're old enough to call into the show, you're old enough to realize that, you know, we don't control the universe in that way. Mm-hmm. So the first thing to do is to get really comfortable with, wow, okay, from the way they're seeing the world, they're seeing an outside-in world right now where the way they feel on the inside is the result of these things that are happening on the outside. Mm-hmm. And the way they're seeing things, well, of course, that's they're going to try and... It's all about the world. And even if they go from victim to owner, even if they make the shift to, okay, I'm going to take control of my circumstances, mm-hmm. they're still missing the point because it's not the circumstances that are causing the unrest. Mm-hmm. And we can turn that back towards you and go, it's not that they're saying those things. that's causing you to feel burdened. It's that you take them on for yourself.
Exactly. So how do I stop doing that?
Well, okay, now, but that's a much better question.
Okay.
No offense to your first question. It was a lovely question. I enjoyed talking about it. But it's a question much worth our taking our time with is, okay, if I find myself taking on other people's thoughts, other people's stories, and worrying them around in my own mind.
And getting irritated and annoyed at them.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, then how do I not do that? And the neat thing is there's an answer to that question, which is by seeing what it is that you're really doing. Because what you're doing is, see, we all have consciousness. We all have the ability to be aware of our experience. And what we tend to be aware of is whatever is going on in our head. In other words, whatever sort of thoughts are in there. Mm-hmm. And the more we... I heard a really nice analogy for this today, actually. Somebody was saying, it's like if you think of a thought like a dollar bill, and then each time you play with it some more, you think about it some more, it's like adding a zero. Mm-hmm. So that $1 bill, which, you know, you probably don't think too much about, becomes a $10 bill. Mm-hmm. And now you're beginning to think about it more, and so now it becomes a $100 bill. Mm-hmm. And now you're thinking about it some more, and it's now like a $1,000 check, and you're going, wow, this is really important. And then it's worth $10,000, and it's like, oh my God, this is the most important. It's $1 million. Oh my God!
It's so ruminating.
Yeah, it's ruminating. It's like, you know, cows chewing their cud, which I always thought sounded sweet until I realized it was their own vomit that they're chewing on. And it's like, so if you were calling in, Nadia, to say, how can I stop chewing on my own vomit?
Oh, okay.
I might say, by spitting it out, not doing that. And it's kind of the same thing. It's actually more effort to do what you've been doing, even though it feels normal, than it is to just let that come in and let it go out.
So removing myself from the situation, not being as available to these people who I get these feelings when I'm around,
well,
I'm actually...
That...
causing more anxiety for myself.
Well, it sounds like you are, sure. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, you phoned in to talk to me about it, so
yeah,
you probably are.
Yeah, because I don't want to be around them, yet there are people in my life that are close.
Whereas if you can get yourself to the point, and I that sounds like maybe there's a lot of effort involved, and I'm going to suggest there really isn't, where you can be around them, and it can just kind of pass through you.
Yeah.
You can be somewhat transparent to it. Because
I know the transparent thing, too. It's hard.
Well, it's hard only because we're not used to allowing it.
Yeah. I mean, I can feel the anxiety in my chest when they start talking. And then when I say what I think, there's trouble because I'm not accepting them.
Right. And so just here, just for you, mm-hmm. okay? Just for Nadia. Mm-hmm. As an experiment. See what it's like to, when you next feel that anxiety in your chest, to recognize that that's just a thought in your head that's creating that.
Okay. I've read all Eckhart's books, Byron Katie, all of those. I mean,
yeah, but have you read Michael Neal?
Yes, I did. I was just teasing.
But the reason that it sounds like we're all saying the same thing is because in many ways we are, which is that when you see the nature of thought, which is that we think stuff and it starts to seem real, and that our experience is 100% that. It's not to do, our emotional experience is not to do with what's going on around us or what other people are doing. It's to do with our own thinking. Then you can relax and just kind of go, okay, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do my best to stay in my well-being and to let these thoughts come in and go. And know that as you get more comfortable doing that, you won't need to sort of set up these boundaries with the people around you. Some of them may go of their own accord, mm-hmm. but the rest will wonder why suddenly they feel so good when they're around Nadia.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Okay, Nadia. It's not really a death sentence, but okay.
Thank you so much. I really enjoy your show.
Oh, you're very welcome. We're going to be back with more of your calls, more thoughts on the lesser of two evils, and just some more interesting insights to share right after this break. Bye-bye for now.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the lesser of two evils. And really what we're talking about is the possibility that when it really feels like you've got to choose between a rock and a hard place, as one of our callers said earlier, that it's just because you're not seeing the entire landscape. And then as you open up to seeing, you'll find there's always another way to see. And when you see it differently, you'll know to do differently. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go from North Carolina to Virginia to California to Julie. Julie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yes. I was listening to your show and I had really good insights on like boundaries. And I had problems with my husband with boundaries. We had a lot of issues with that. And I actually had left the marriage about a month ago. Because of these issues, some of it's my fault, but a lot of it has to do with a lot of anger issues on his side. And I left it, and I was just my question is that I'm working on myself right now, and I'm trying to build myself up and kind of find what I want to do with my life. At the same time, I have been communicating with my husband, and he has since I left been very open to fixing a lot of these issues, and I don't want to rush it, and I just wanted to, and I'm a little afraid of the boundary issues of letting things slip by on my side. So I guess I wanted some advice about how to handle that.
Let me tell you about a call I took this morning from a client who's visiting family, and he said it was quite distressing because he found himself seeing his brother for the first time in a long time, and his brother, you know, he's known his brother had an alcohol problem, but he said the best way I can describe it is he's sort of green and yellow, you know, so he his kidneys have clearly stopped working properly, and he may be close to death. And he said, I really want to have a conversation with my brother, and I don't know what to say. And we talked a lot about unconditional love and about just that when people get that they're loved unconditionally, that even if it's by only one person, and that they have a choice about what they do or don't do, it's amazing how often the choice they make is a positive one. Mm-hmm. That the reason people don't make those choices is either because they get caught up in a push me, pull you about, you can't make me do this, even if what it is that somebody's trying to make them do is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also because sometimes they don't see it as a choice. They don't get that just because somebody says something mean to you doesn't mean you have to hit them. Just because somebody looks at you funny doesn't mean you have to yell at them. Whatever it is in the individual case. And I said the only other thing, though, that's going to really impact how that conversation goes, and I will connect this back up for you if it doesn't connect up by itself, is the hope. Because I said to him, it sounds like you're feeling a bit hopeless about this. And he said, well, I kind of am. And I said, and yet, I know that you know that in any moment, the potential's there for your brother to see it differently. And that the minute he does, he would just stop drinking. And even if it's too late for him physically, even if he's pushed his body past the point of no return, he could at least live out the rest of his days in peace. And that was actually all he needed to be reminded of, is that, you know, we're only one insight away. And the reason that story came to mind when you were telling me about the situation with your husband is, it's not, oh, well, you know, this has happened now, so it's too late. And I'm not saying that you should get back together or that you have to or anything like that. But it's just recognizing that until you see differently, until he sees differently, all the boundaries in the world are at best going to control the hatred. If you think of boundaries like in the Middle East, mm-hmm. you know, or in any country, all those boundaries do is they sort of say, I promise not to attack until you get to here. And if you're at the point where your relationship is built on a promise not to take drastic action until a line is crossed, then that's not the basis for a relationship that's going to work long term. But when either of you really starts to see differently, starts to see into the nature of, boy, half of my arguments are with the version of you that lives in my head. Right? Tell me that's not true. Because yeah, I don't know any yeah. relationship that's not true in. Where half the arguments at least aren't even with the person. They're with the little sock puppet of them we have in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
And that as I begin to see that, as I begin to see that the purpose of relationship, and this is my understanding of the purpose of relationship, is that it amplifies the well-being in two people. And it the connection that can get created from that and the space that relationship can be for love and connection to spread is just, it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all get caught up in thinking, well, yeah, that love and connection is great, but what about the sleeping arrangements? And, you know, yeah, that love and connection is wonderful, but what about, what about the socks? What about the toothpaste tube? What about the, and I'm not saying that, again, please understand, I know nothing of your life. So I'm not trying to tell you that, you know, what's been an issue in your relationship isn't an issue. I'm sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that your husband is one insight away from not feeling like he has to control his temper all the time, because he won't see it that way. And that you're an insight away from understanding what's going on in a way that will make it clear to you, do you know what? It's not safe to be there right now. So I'm not going to be. Or actually, he has changed. And I can see that. Does this make sense? I've been talking a lot. Let me check in. Let me check in with you.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And I know since this experience happened, my eyes definitely have been opening up different ways, and I wasn't even sure what I was doing initially when I left, but it's starting to make sense. And I see him, like, from what I could tell, we've just been just talking to phone, a lot of emails. That's been kind of the way I can express myself right now. I feel like he is, like, really taking in what I'm saying, and he's listening, and he's really doing, on his side, taking steps towards, you know, kind of working out these issues. I guess I still have a little bit fear that if I go back too soon, if that's what I choose to do, that things are going to repeat itself again. So I guess if I do that, I'll have to have a little bit of faith there, knowing or trusting that it won't. So
I wouldn't have faith in that, Julie. If you want to find faith in something in this situation,
uh-huh.
I would have faith in your wisdom to guide you the right time to get back in, if that's mm-hmm. what you're guided to do. And not to bring you back in too soon out of fear, out of naive hope. You know,
right.
Like seeing what you want to see, not what's there.
Mm-hmm.
And trust your wisdom to guide you about that. And also trust that your wisdom will take you back out if that's what needs to happen.
Okay.
Because to have faith that, oh, well, he promised he wouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
We all know too many people who've been burned on that one.
Yeah, that's and I'm at my threshold with that too.
Right, and so we don't need. But the good thing is, we don't need that kind of faith. We don't need to believe somebody will behave a certain way. We just need to know that we're going to be okay, and we're going to take care of ourselves, whichever way they behave.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah. So carry that faith with you, because that faith in your own wisdom, that's going to take care of you.
So basically, you mean really just trust myself and my judgment. And
trust yourself and your judgment, and mm-hmm. and know that, you know, if it turns out that your judgment was off,
uh-huh.
then you'll do something different.
That's true.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Do you know, that's one of the things I say in the book Supercoach. I talk about that really the secret of decisions is that the way our lives turn out, it's not the result of the decision we make. It's the result of how we deal with the consequences of that decision. And so people will often phone or talk to me or come to me as a client and say, well, you know, I don't know. How do I know if I'm making the right decision? Well, you don't. But what you can know is that whatever decision you make, there will be consequences. And as long as you stay tuned in and present to those consequences, you'll be able to work with those consequences to create whatever it is you want to create in that situation. Let's go back to the East Coast. Let's go to Maureen in Connecticut. Maureen, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I made a move out to the East Coast from the Midwest about 4 months ago. I really fell in love with it. It was just supposed to be a temporary thing, and now I had started looking for another place to live since the place I'm living when I gave notice got rented right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm unable to find a place, and I'm unable to right now find work. My resume is being reviewed and by different places, and it's been like that for a good number of weeks. My situation right now is that I've got a deadline. Moving day is tomorrow morning. So I love it out here. Have the opportunity to stay in somebody's attic, a finished attic, for, you know, a good couple weeks or a month, or move back from where I was and, you know, sort of, I guess, group together, grab all my stuff, and try again in the spring.
So I've got a question, Maureen. Why are you even considering the second option? Because here's what I just heard, right?
Right?
Somebody just called my show and said, I love where I am, and I've got to move out of the house that I'm in, but I've got a place that I can go to in the short term that's going to give me another month here. I've got irons in the fire. I've got things that might come. Or do I jack it all in, go back to where I didn't really like it, and then 6 months from now, maybe go back and go to where I want to be?
It seems like it's become habit. I've done it before, so it's very familiar.
Some habits are worth breaking.
I know, I mean, and this is probably one of them. It's my money situation, which is probably most people's, is just the funds. I just don't see what's not quite there. And what I do see in my financial situation is looking a bit grim.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing things to address that, from the sounds of it, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So if a month from now, when your attic disappears, and you somehow have managed to not make any headway anywhere, not find any insight towards a place to stay, not had any progress towards, making money, if at that point you decided to go back, well, that might make a little bit of sense. There might be a practical element to that.
Okay.
But so it's not, you know, thou shalt never use that escape hatch again.
Right.
It's just, don't escape when there's nothing to escape from.
Okay. Now, all my belongings, I just feel so disconnected from, you know, material things. All my belongings, everything is in a storage locker. And it's just, I know that someday I can get that back, no problem. That's, I think, probably it's becoming an issue as well.
Okay.
As winter comes along, somehow the little summer tank tops just don't keep you warm like they used to.
Right. So now tell me if I'm being naive, Maureen, but
okay,
can you not bring a box of the tank tops to the storage facility and swap them out for some sweaters?
If I fly back,
okay,
all my possessions are halfway across the country.
Okay, and there's no one there who could send you a box of sweaters?
I could probably buy some at a thrift store. I suppose that's an option. It's very much of an option.
See, what it reminds me of is somebody who goes to the refrigerator and looks all around and shuts the refrigerator door all disappointed, and you say, why are you disappointed? And they say, oh, I wanted an omelet, but all there was eggs and cheese and butter. It's like, really, Maureen? I'm with you on this. I understand how it feels, but if you want to stay, if what's between you and staying is a sweater, Go get a sweater.
Is that just,
don't move back to the Midwest.
When I moved here, everything just, it just opened. And, you know, the path was opened, everything just clicked. And now the click stopped. And it's very difficult. Everything is a struggle to make, you know, to even think or, you know, move towards.
Okay.
That's what I'm having an issue with. It just is not yielding the way it was.
So the really simple question that I can ask is, do you want to stay in Connecticut?
I do.
Then there's really nothing else to talk about.
Okay.
The question becomes, how do I make that stay as enjoyable as possible? How do I use my time here to create what I want to create?
Right.
And promise yourself that you'll continue to check in. And if at someday the answer to that question, do I want to be in Connecticut, is no, well, that would be good to know.
Okay.
But until then, there's nothing to decide.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye. You know, I remember I for years, and those of you know my story, you know, I was a professional actor and I did a sitcom in Wales, and I remember there were periods of years where I wouldn't work as an actor. I'd only get small parts on things. And I wouldn't make very much money. And the question that I would ask myself throughout the whole time was, if I was offered a job tomorrow, would I take it? And the answer was a resounding yes up until about 2002. And in 2002, I noticed the answer switched to maybe. And that's when I sort of stopped doing so much of that kind of work and started doing more and more of what it is that I do now. And there is a simplicity to a lot of these things, is we think we've got to make a good decision instead of actually just trusting our wisdom, which will always have an answer to the question, do I want to? And if the answer is yes, then your question becomes, okay, how do I make it work? Not what should I do? Let's go. We're going to go back to the Midwest. We're going to go to Illinois and talk to Teresa. Teresa, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi.
Hello.
Do you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Gee, that last caller sounded a lot like me.
I know. Isn't that great? Isn't that convenient?
It is. That was very convenient. In fact, one earlier also sounded a lot like me. Thank you for having this particular program on today. And my question was, I was approached yesterday. I didn't have direct contact, but with a relative, an aunt, that I have cared very much about in the past. A few years ago, my grandmother died. And as often happened with estates, I was not directly involved, but my aunt and my mother were made co-executors, having never gotten along, and rather sort of a debacle ensued, and I had a lot of enmity directed toward me. I was rather caught in the middle, but there was a gesture yesterday on my aunt's part, a very lovely gesture. I believe, I'm not sure, and I am concerned about reciprocating in this case, because the estate is still not yet closed. And I am, it's not a huge estate, which is why it's all been so ludicrous.
So Teresa, let me ask you a question. Uh-huh. And I'm sorry that, you know, this
sure.
is all going on, and it is part of real life.
Yeah.
And the question is, if you call back your aunt,
mm-hmm.
what is it that you're afraid might happen?
I'm afraid that it will open up legal proceedings, again. I'm afraid that it will...
Is there a restraining order against you?
Against me? No, no.
So I'm wondering, how can a phone call bring legal proceedings about?
I am afraid that she will, by my contacting her, want either information that it is I'm a conduit to information from my mother, or that I am just not sure of her motives.
Right, and if you phoned it, I'm not saying, please don't hear this is what I think you should do,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm trying to understand, because somehow the way you've created this in your head, there are some problems there that I'm having difficulty creating in my head. So I'm trying to see if I can create them too.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can be as befuddled as you. Okay, because right now
which
it seems,
is extreme.
Right now
I don't think
just,
you want to be in that
well,
state.
You know, I don't mind visiting. I don't mind being a tourist there. So if my aunt phones and I phone my aunt and I say, "Hey, aunt, lovely to hear from you. I've really missed you," and she says, "Ah, well, now that I've got you on the phone, tell me what's going on with your mother," and I say, "No, I won't do that. I'm delighted to have a chat with you, but I'm not going to get involved in that." "Well, you should get involved." Do you know what? I'm going to say it one more time, that I'd love to talk with you, but I don't want to talk about that. And if that's okay, then yeah, let's talk. And if that's not okay, then I understand. And I'll talk to you again sometime. And then she either goes, and you say goodbye, or she says, "Do you know what? Actually, I miss you too. And you have a lovely chat." So tell me why that's not what's going to happen.
Without giving in a lot of information, I have a severe form of epilepsy, and when she made the gesture yesterday, not that she initiated, but all of the things surrounding it, I spent the night with several seizures.
Right.
And I am afraid the overwhelming sort of emotions that it evoked, I am afraid of also medical repercussions.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay, thank you. That then makes some sense of it for me.
Okay.
So let me ask it this way. Can you see the possibility of getting yourself to a place with this where you were sufficiently comfortable whichever way it turned out that you would be okay making contact?
Well, I think that with a little space, I think I can. I was concerned if I didn't respond immediately, she might take it as a rejection. I thought if I had a little space to assimilate this, because it needs, for some reason, my brain a little bit more time to assimilate, I thought that I could possibly get to that place. I am also worried about alienating my mother if the relations are opened up.
Okay. So here's what I know to do in situations like that is elevate it to the back burner.
Okay.
In other words, we think of the back burner as where we put the unimportant stuff, but actually the back burner is where we put the important stuff so that it can come to the right temperature until it's ready. And so rather than obsessing about this, rather than getting involved in lots of conversations about it, just kind of put it to that part of your brain and say, "Hey, wisdom, hey, inner guidance, I don't know what to do here. I'm going to go about my day. And if you got something for me, let me know." And then just have the most pleasant day, the most enjoyable day that you can create for yourself. And keep doing that until you know what to do. Because very often it's as simple as the reason we get caught up in things is because we're not okay not knowing for long enough. Because if
Could
I'm...
you repeat that?
Yeah, we get to a point where we're not okay not knowing for long enough. So we try to force a resolution. We try to force ourselves to know what we don't yet know. And I'm saying, give it that space. And when you know what to do, do it. But until then, don't do it. Don't do what you don't know what to do. And what's fascinating is in that space, all sorts of wonderful things can take care of themselves. And
that
we sometimes don't get the chance to experience that because we're so busy trying to make it a certain way.
I think that's a very viable thing for me to be able to do.
All right, Teresa. Thank you very much for phoning in. Please phone back anytime. Let us know how it goes.
All right. Thank you so much. Okay.
Bye.
Right, bye-bye.
And that, just because we're coming to the end, that's a great example of that you never have to choose between the lesser of two evils. Well, if I do this with my mother, and if I do this, then my aunt, and if I do this, then my seizures. No. No, that's the wait, because there is another way. And when that way comes to her, she'll know what to do. We're going to be back next week with a brand new show. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.